Well, I would have enjoyed singing more and listening to Brother Leonard more because I was really getting inspired by the songs and by what he shared in relation to Moses and the challenges. And I just connect with that feeling all over again when you take that little newborn child. I often say this to the new parents in our congregations. You have somebody there that will endure for all eternity in either heaven or hell. And your impact on their life probably has more of an influence than anybody else's, since you're the parents, and it's a solemn responsibility. But what a tremendous blessing and privilege he's given us. God stopped creation in 6 days, but procreation keeps filling up souls for eternity. And would to God they would all go to be with him and praise him around his throne, because that's what he wants. He's a God that craves fellowship. He wants fellowship with you. He wants a relationship with you. He wants you to talk to him, and he wants to fill you with his grace, and he wants to send you as a steward out into the field to minister grace to the people that you meet, but especially in our homes. Well, thank you so much for the privilege to be here. I wrote this. Thank you to the congregation. Enjoyed seeing your unity created out of a variety of traditional backgrounds. And I said that because of what I said this morning about my vigorous discussion with somebody that helped me in my emotional journey to forget myself, because we were discussing the difference between merging all of these Anabaptist groups and their traditional backgrounds and ours to particularly honor only one, but put the Bible first. And you know what? It's been a real blessing to be here to sense your unity. I'm sure that we don't see all the human side, but just keep up the good work is what I'll say. This can only be the result of strong spiritual vision, and we need to keep that because the world is pressing in on us in so many ways. I believe I have my viewpoint and opinions about the prophetic scriptures and what's going to happen, but we'll let that go for tonight as well. Now tonight, we're going to kind of circle back around to the first night where we talked about the fact that whenever the gospel came, it turned fathers' hearts to children and children's hearts to father. And there was this plea to make yourself recipients of the grace of God. Honor the wife as a weaker vessel. Accept your children. Accept your spouse. Work out your things, work out your disagreements. And tonight we come to the thought of fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Family relationships that foster spiritual health. Some people make it as Christians in spite of the home they were raised in. And there are some people that don't turn out right, even though they were raised in Christian homes, because we all are free moral agents. We can have a choice. And I just wrote this, children who have grown up and left the nest will always make their own choice in life. No couple can live so perfectly that you take all choice away. But let us make sure we are honest and humble and that we confront our own carnality so we help bring out the best in our children. We send them out into a dangerous world with a lot of problems and conflicts. And so much of it depends on if we were able to resolve our differences and deal with our own carnality at home. I'd like for us to read these verses together. I chose the Amplified for these two verses because it just kind of like puts a strong definition to every word, okay? And it greatly expands, it's amplified over the original text. And I like what it says. Wouldn't you stand for reading these two verses again tonight? Together, fathers, do not provoke or irritate or fret your children. Do not be hard on them or harass them, lest they become discouraged and sullen and morose and feel inferior and frustrated. Do not break their spirit. Fathers, do not irritate and provoke your children to anger. Do not exasperate them to resentment. but rear them tenderly in the training and discipline and the counsel and admonition of the Lord. You may be seated. Now, why in the world would fathers discourage, exasperate, and frustrate, and build resentment, irritate, and provoke their children? Why would they do that? What do you have to do in order to do that? Just be selfish. It is so easy. I know our parents, you know, we were born in the world and all we think about is ourselves. And our parents' parents work so hard trying to get us to think about each other, settle our disputes with our siblings, and work things out, and then you get married. And you married somebody who wasn't an ever so at all, or whatever they were, and your personalities, you're so different, and all of a sudden you've got to figure out how to get along with each other in peace and blessing. And it is a wonderful journey, but it's not something that just happens automatically. It's intentional. And God puts us together, and that's why we spent that time in the first Wednesday night talking about accepting your spouse and giving honor to them and deciding to focus on the good instead of picking at the things that you could in your carnality. Well, in this lesson tonight, we're going to look at 6 points. Avoid common parental mistakes. Handle all relationships with gospel tenderness. Beware the tensions of dysfunctional society homes, dysfunctional homes. Evaluate the love-discipline balance. Be honest with your home deportment. The activities are what's going on there. And watch for signs that you are angering your children, frustrating your children. Watch for those signs. So we have a big agenda, don't we? Well, I just want to say that underneath it all, You can't do this by yourself. It takes humility and it takes the grace of God, but God wants to help you. God wants to give grace to the humble. And I almost feel like having a whole night on that. How to reach into that treasure chest of grace and get divine assistance for your journey. Because if you don't get divine assistance, if you don't get His help, that great God of wonders was such a powerful song tonight. And then love at home. It said that first, and then the other put it out there, and the only way you can have love at home is this way. Well, one of the imperatives for us as fathers and mothers is that we find answer for our own adult carnality. This is needed in order that we may give our children emotional freedom. Both Bible verses given above call out parents that provoke anger in their children. It would be rare to find parents that do that on purpose. But all we have to do is act naturally. We find that we do that without trying. These verses reveal the emotional consequences. Look at those terrible words, discouraged, sullen, morose, feeling inferior and frustrated, breaking their spirit. And that's what the word athumeo actually means. They don't have any spirit left. They just look dully out of their eyes because they've been so abused by mom or dad or both. You know, and it's terrible. Exasperated to resentment. This are all things that are included in these verses. Colossians speaks of discouraged, sullen, and morose, feeling inferior and frustrated. Ephesians speaks of children being exasperated. And all of these emotional consequences are devastating, and you see them in people. The haunted look behind their eyes, and even sometimes in church families. And this is so sad when you see this going on. A dysfunctional home, and a dysfunctional marriage will grow into a dysfunctional home. And it doesn't have to be, brothers and sisters. We don't have to live that way. And that's what we're going to be thinking about tonight. No child should become a victim of his parents' mistreatment. Shouldn't. We have the freedom and power to choose to be the children of our Heavenly Father. Finding acceptance in Him will keep us from continuing down the path of abuse that our parental home may have introduced us to. But the sad fact brought out in the Bible is that sinning or self-focused parents will generate emotionally frustrated children. Another way of saying this is that the emotional well-being of children, including their view of God and outlook in life, is primarily established by how their parents relate to them. So much of it is. But you are not robots, and neither are you little wound-up toys. I wanted to use an object lesson in school, so I bought this little chick at Dollar General. And you could wind it up, and it would hop along. You know, it's kind of an Easter toy. It's kind of fun. And it's cute. But that's not cute when it's your child. He's just a wind-up toy. You know? They have their own spirit and their own mind, but you can influence them very much with how they are going to be. There are some who struggle with discouragement, unhappiness, and melancholy, and they do so because of how they were treated as children. One of the phrases you're going to find repeated near the end of this lesson is that home life must be happy for children to want to follow in the footsteps of their parents. If there are unresolved issues, children will feel justified in going their way. And they will walk out of the church, they will walk out of a house, they will walk out of a home in the church of that community, and they will not feel guilty for walking away because of how much hypocrisy they sense there. Well, it's so important. We go back, circle back to the theme in our paddle here of treasuring them. And not just because of what they do for us. We have this little thing about, do our grandchildren love us because of they love grandma or because they love grandma's cookies? And my wife does a good job with that. But if your children sense that you love them because you like what of a reputation it gives you, or what they do for your business, or what they do, how they add to your bank accounts, or whatever it is. You have a bunch of children because they make your farm or your business work better or whatever it is, and they're used. That's okay. I mean, it's not wrong to employ children and give them things to do, but the fact of the matter is do you have the business because you love your children, or do you have your children because you love your business? Do you love your bank account? And so you use people for that, and that comes through just pretty strong as it goes in everyday life. And so we talk about grandma's cookies. The kind of love parents are to give their children is an unconditional love, a love for their eternal well-being that desires to serve their best interests no matter the investment in time and energy. It is a love that nurtures them for the Lord. And then when the Lord calls them away from our home or our program, we release them for the Lord's service, because we are stewards of the grace of God. And so this evening, you really have to look at your core values. What are our core values? Who are we living for? And if we talked about last night, that line of living for the lust of the flesh, and it can be money, it can be reputation, it can be power, it can be influence. If you're living on that side of the line, going to be known by your family. But if you're living on this side for sanctification and honor, and you're really loving for the Lord. But what I don't understand is sometimes I've seen homes where they made great sacrifices for the church and the children got bitter over that. So there has to be some way that we communicate that they are a priority in our life. And we are not going to cut them short in the long run because of we have some other goal. Well, we look at some mistakes here. We've got a list of mistakes. First of all, avoid the common mistakes. But it's a sad fact that many young people feel justified in rebelling against their church-going parents. And why children from conservative Christian homes feel justified in rejecting their parents' religion. And it's sad when they go away feeling justifiably angry with their parents, or often feel no desire to follow their parents' example or stay in his parents' church. Many parents watch their children make choices that break their hearts, and they fail to connect the dots that they themselves are the ones who set them on the course because of their own carnality. And that is something to stop and think about, and that's what I'm asking you as parents, us as parents, to do tonight. Are the choices that I'm making that are frustrating my children and going to make them feel justified to walk away? I regret some of those things. I've gone back and apologized to some of my sons for some of the courses that I took. And, they've forgiven me. They tell me that they forgive me for that. But you know what? That cannot totally undo everything else and how it was. I really feel that in the moral journey of your teenagers, you should come alongside as an ally rather than trying to make the pain of punishment as bad as the pleasure of disobedience. I just have changed my viewpoint on that, but you can't undo what was done. All right, so here we are. What are some of them? In disciplining in anger or frustration, or expressing anger in everyday life and fail to acknowledge the carnality of it. What do you do, Dad, if you got mad and told your son off? What do you do afterward if you calm down? I remember, I am quite a smart mouth, and that makes problems. You can ask my wife about that if you want to. But my mom knew about it too, but she was too, okay? So she kind of liked it, and that didn't make it any much better. But I remember we had this van, and the motor was in the middle between the front two seats, and you could sit on the motor, okay? We didn't have to wear car seats back then. And so I make this smart comment, and my mother hauls off and slaps me for making it. And then she came back and apologized. That really did something to me. Now, the smart comment I made to my father and got my spanking at 14, he never apologized for. And at first I thought he should. But that night I went over to get some pity from my neighbor, Harold Carpenter, who's like 2 or 3 years older than me. And he gave me the second spanking of the evening. He said, "You know what? I kind of thought you deserved what you got." And that was good for me. It's good to stop and think about what that does for you, because you know what? We're human beings, and we're learning from each other, and we're relating to each other. And I certainly, I know that my father had feelings in it, but you know what? I don't blame him at all for what I said. And it's just. But what about a dad that's angry all the time? My father wasn't. But what about children who grow up with angry parents? Evan, I talked about here, wonders why his dad seems angry all the time. Is it something that he has done wrong? When he stops to think about it, he can't remember the last time his father smiled with him over some experience or they had together. Yes, he's seen his father laugh with the neighbors or when he's at church, but why not at home? Sarah cringes when her mother gives vent to her mood that go up and down. She wonders if it's her fault. Do we have long-term goals that are selfish that we're failing to meet? Does dad have his heart set on finances and money? Does mom set on having a fine house and keeping up with all of the pressures of this age of the housekeeping thing? Children assume that what they receive from their parents is normal and copy it, or else they sense it is wrong. And that's my burden tonight, because they pick up on your moods. I guess one of my most cringeworthy moments, one day I was with a father when he decided to chew out his son. I've never heard a father talk to his child that way. He said, "You're going to turn out just like your Uncle Mark." I don't know what the uncle was. He was lazy and good for nothing. "I give you a chore to do," and it turned out the boy would fall asleep in the haymow, or he would just not finish his job. And the dad would just abuse him verbally again and again. And my heart just went out to the boy. Because if a dad would do that in front of me, I was a good bit younger, and what do you do in a situation like that? But it was a very conservative home. And how do you put all that together? What do you do with that? But then I found out that that's the way his dad treated him. You know, it was just a generational sin. I don't believe in generational sins, except for the fact that what's normal in one generation can be passed on as normal to the next, and it goes on into the next. And if you were raised in an abusive setting, do not dare to justify your own anger and abuse because of the fact that that's the way you were raised. You can't do that. If we discipline because we're in a bad mood, you can get away with it one day and you can't the next. I saw that in a school teacher. The children, I better be careful again about this, but the children would say that we could tell whether we could get away with stuff by the way our teacher combed her hair. And if it was pulled real back, you better walk the line. And if it was all ruffled up, it was okay. You'd get away with anything. Well, moods. Am I a person who has no control over my spirit? Am I like a city without walls? Nothing will spill out of a bucket that's not inside at first, and nothing will come out of a spirit-controlled person except the fruit of the Spirit, okay? And if something else is coming out of your life in your moments of frustration, look why it's there and get honest with God and go back and say you're sorry and make it right. Some are perfectionistic and become nearly impossible to please. Some of us may do everything ourselves instead of training our children to help. Then we wonder why they're so helpless. Or I may continually criticize my children. This will shape how my child sees himself if I have too high a standard. The child knows he cannot measure up. This will frustrate him. My child needs to see that when he makes a sincere effort to please me, that I will give him a word of praise, even if it's childish and not quite perfect, because that's the way it is. They can't perform everything. And there's nothing like, I still remember the day when I had had appendectomy and our neighbor wanted to rent our chicken house that was empty and put horses in it. And so a week and two days after my surgery, it was a Saturday after, I think I had a surgery on a Friday. Anyway, I went out there and I worked too hard trying to put the boards up for the stalls for the horses. And when I came in the house, my incision was hurting. Now, my father had a situation where he laughed too hard at the Stahlfuss jokes, and his incision came open. He had to go back and get it sewed back up again. So when I went and complained to my mother, where I usually got my comfort, I got a pretty good tongue lashing for that. Don't you know better than to go out there and work whenever you just had surgery? Why didn't you use your head? You know what happened to your father? And I still remember that moment, and I was kind of cringing from that. And so I went into the study, and I found my father. He was studying for the next day's sermon. And I told him, and he put his arm around me, and he said, "Hey, Steve, I want you to know that we men are tougher than the ladies think. You'll be all right." I can just still feel that, you know. And you can do that for your son. You can do that for your daughter. When you give them comfort in a time when they're feeling insecure, they catch you at nighttime. I had read a book. This is a better story. I remember I read a book. I checked out the public school. We had went to public school. At the library, and in the very end, the main character was speeding along in his roadster, and he ran off the road, and he wrecked, and he killed him. He got killed. And I was just devastated because I didn't know that they ever wrote stories where they end up that way. And I went out crying to my mother. I must have been in fifth or sixth grade, and that's pretty big, isn't it? But I went out to my mother, and she put her arm around me and said, "You'll be all right. We read bad stories, but it's just a story. It isn't you. It's okay." And I went back and fell asleep. It's okay. You know, and those kind of things leave such an impression of love and acceptance. And you want that. So you need to give them. Well, here's this verse in Isaiah. "The Lord God hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak a word in season. To him that is weary, he wakeneth morning by morning. He wakeneth my ear to hear as the learned." And isn't that a blessing? If you listen to God, start your day with God, walk with God, and then you can give a word of comfort to your child that is hurting. If we make promises of reward or benefit, summer's coming after a while. Get your summer calendar and pick out, this I learned from 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Take your calendar, and if you've got a family, mark on there a few days when you're just going to take off and do something. When you're just going to do that. Maybe you're going to go to, is that Crayola factory still down there? Maybe you're just going to go there. Or maybe you're going to go see the Turkey Hill Museum. Or maybe you're going to see the museum in Harrisburg. What's that called? Science? Huh?
Whitaker Center?
Yeah. Maybe it's that. Or maybe it's something else. And then start talking about it, and your family has something to look forward to, you know? It's not going to break the bank for you if you take a day like that, and it puts a memory in them. But if you mark it down and then you don't do it, I'm going to take you fishing when we get done. Your child will not forget that you made a promise. And they're like, that's all I matter, you know? That's all I matter to them. If we ignore the needs of our children to pursue some personal dream, I don't want to pick on you ladies. But I still remember the heartache of the girls who said, "Mom had to have her health food store, and she didn't really care about us as children." Or the one who said, the father who talked about his wife, a writer. She always goes around all day with her head in the clouds, like she's up there living somewhere else, figuring out what else she's going to write. Listen, you can't afford to be doing that kind of thing when you're raising children. You have to be connected. You have to be talking. You have to be singing. You have to engage them in your life, because this is how we raise our children. God gives us seasons in life. We all know that opportunities exist that will soon disappear. The book of Proverbs uses the phrase, "Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy son spare for his crying." The day for giving undivided attention to mothering or caring for the family as a father will soon pass, and we can never go back. Another way to anger a child is to show partiality or preference of one child over another. And here's where I talked about him. How about whenever we are compared in a negative way? That's where I have the story of the old Ford tractor. And I stalled it down there in the garden, and it was nighttime. I went around the corner, and we didn't have a farm. We just had a little, but my father had this old tractor, and I stalled it. And I can still hear him as we walked up to the house saying, "I don't know why you can't be more like Harold. It seemed like he can just operate equipment, but you can't." Yes, I'm sorry. There's a lot of equipment that I am not intuitive to know how. I'm not a mechanic intuitive. I can't do those kind of things. But it's funny how that I've forgiven my father. That's a long time ago. He didn't mean anything by it. But funny how all that whole summer, that I don't even know what summer it was. But that's the only thing I remember, those words. You know, you freeze those kind of things and you get a little mental image about yourself. Parents, be very careful and make sure that you give compliments and confirmation to your child as they try to live their life. I knew of a situation where parents were too permissive. And they allowed the little children just to terrorize and tear up the older children's stuff. And they didn't know what to do about it. If you are humiliated in front of your peers, there's all kinds of things. The thing that I want to ask you tonight is, in what way did your parents frustrate you? What did they do that hurt you? Because that's probably what you will do to your children, because it's so normal you don't even think about it. And then ask your wife or ask your husband if you do that sometimes, if you act that out in what you remember that your parents did to you. If we ignore their request or mock them for asking questions or on and on, there's just so many ways to do this, but it hurts. Now, the second point that I wanted to talk about tonight is handling relationships with gospel tenderness, page 58. And I've already spoke about Malachi 4. Matthew 19 is such a strong gospel era. And Jesus' influence is characterized by fathers and children having hearts turned toward each other. This is what we studied and learned in our first lesson. We need to see our children as eternal souls and love them as God loves them. We must recognize that our children have feelings. And so we speak the truth in love, may grow up into Him in all things, which is the head. Feeling loved gives you security. If you feel loved, then it gives you security, and we all need that. And if your love is accepted, then that gives you worth. It makes you feel like you're worth something. And so if you know the child, you give him love, he feels secure. And if you tell him that you appreciate that he loves you, that makes him feel like he's done something worthwhile. We all need security, worth, and acceptance. And both of these together equals acceptance. And this is what Jesus gave to receive from his Father. This is my beloved Son. Another thing is identity. This is my beloved Son. It's connection. In whom I am well pleased. He was loved. He was accepted. And it gave him worth. And God gave this to his Son, and it's right for us to give it to our children. Those are things that they need as they grow up. And that's gospel tenderness. It's also right to forgive. Not holding, remembering old mistakes, but I'll get on that a little while later. Now, number three is beware the tension that rules in the dysfunctional home. We learned these one time in study and trying to help a young lady work through her childhood memories. And they talked about, in this particular study, four rules that are evidence of a dysfunctional home. Don't talk. You can't talk about who you really are. You can't talk about what's on your mind because it won't be accepted. Don't trust because you never know what mood your parents are going to be in or what you're going to trigger depending on what you say. You got to walk around on eggshells. Don't be honest with your emotions. Don't say, I'm struggling with fear or anger or I feel really happy, or you can't talk about how you feel because that doesn't count. And don't make a mistake, because you ever make a mistake, it'll never be forgiven you. You'll be held up against you. Remember when you ran out of gas? I mean, you're so stupid, you can't, why don't you think about stuff before you do it? Or whatever it is, stuff's just dragged up again and again and again. Those are evidences of a dysfunctional home. And what are the expected results from that? Colossians 3 says that they are strongly tempted to discouragement. They're going to withdraw their loyalty and affection from their parents. And they're going to be looking for somebody else. And a girl raised in this kind of a setting, don't talk, don't trust, don't feel, don't make any mistakes, and some young man gives her a little attention, she's going to fall head over heels for him. She might not, if she realizes that he's got his own agenda or whatever, but she's very vulnerable to it, any kind of attention that she'll get. The same way for a fella. If that's the way you treat him, it makes him very vulnerable. And then people wonder why their children fall for somebody that they see right through. They're just manipulators. They're just narcissists. They're going to take advantage of you. But if you're not supplying and giving them a home that is filled with Christian acceptance, the things that children are supposed to have, then the day will come when they will be very vulnerable and can't wait to get out of your house. And so these children will withdraw their loyalty. When adult opportunities develop, they often discard the convictions and lifestyle of their parents and feel justified in choosing to live outside their parental homes. Think about your homes. Do you want to have a home like you grew up in? Do you have deep-rooted appreciation for what? And why don't you? When you saw your parents living out their religion, was it hypocrisy? Was it selfishness? Was there something else there? Figure it out, because if you don't, you'll reproduce the same things and make a disaster of your home life. Now, it also may be helpful to evaluate the atmosphere of your home. So turn a page over there. Every home is made up of love and discipline. Okay? I guess I don't have to write it here. You have the chart. But in the chart, we're talking about high love, and high discipline. And that's the ideal. We're going to read that one last. We're going to start with low love and low in discipline, okay? In other words, neglectful. If they don't love you and they don't discipline, the mentality of the parents is my interest or problems take priority over yours. Life is all about me. These are narcissistic parents, very selfish. And so the structures, because they're thinking about themselves, is each must fend for himself. Very little communication, very little sharing, and the unspoken rule is stay out of the way and make your own way. Punishments? They very few. Children grow up just doing whatever they want to. And they quickly get a smartphone, or they get their, back in the day it was television or other things, and those kind of things weren't existed, but children go off and live in their own world. A harsh reaction if anyone interferes with the leader. Affection, it's there in theory, but it is not felt. And the outcome is the characters are not developed. And these are lonely souls that go out into the world just longing, looking for some kind of fulfillment somewhere. Now, over here is low in love and high in discipline. So low love and high discipline. So what kind of environment does that produce? Well, here is authoritarian. And dad or mom says, I am the law of this household, domineering figure. So it's either patriarchal or matriarchal control, and depending on how they feel, their moods and desires dominate the family. There is strict rules and very little mercy because there's not much love. It's all discipline. And harsh with a few explanations. Dad loves just throwing his weight around, or mom does, you know, either personality. There's not much affection. Affections or emotions are weakness. And the outcome is those children, they learn to march and they look really good. But underneath, they've got big secrets that they're hiding. And I've witnessed this, where when you get to hear the child really talk about the stuff that they're getting into when nobody knew, tense personalities with hidden deviancies, craving love, usually looking in the wrong kind of places. And that's the kind of environment that produces. Now, high in love, and love and low in discipline is also very dangerous. It's indulgent. The mentality is, whatever you as children want, we will do. It's part of this gentle parenting. The structure is chaotic and unpredictable because the child's moods are unpredictable and chaotic. They control the family. The rules are basically non-existent. The punishments are efforts at placating the child with bursts of anger. Affection, there may be effusive pampering and catering to the wishes, but the outcome is that the child grows up expecting that others will serve their interest. They're easily offended by others, and their moods control the relationship. They can't control themselves because their will was not shaped. It was not made to, they were not made to hearken. And so they grow up, we would call them spoiled. And so these are kind of things that we need to think about. But what the family needs to have is not an authoritarian where dad says, I'm the boss around here and you all got to listen on me, or mom puts her foot down about everything and however she says it is the way it is. But we answer to God. We need a home that honors our Creator. And so we take responsibility as fathers, because fathers are to lead the home. They're to solve the problems. Mothers make the meals or work in the kitchen because they are to be keepers at home, the keepers of the house. And they sense their responsibility and they enlist the others to help because they are comfortable giving direction, but they're also comfortable in taking over responsibilities and resolving the problems. And so there is a higher law we all must answer to. We serve each other. I'm not called to a place of authority because I'm the big boss over you. But you can see this, all of these fit. I grabbed these out of government or somewhere else. It fits in church life as well. If the leaders say, we're the boss around here and all, you've got to listen up on us, you can see you can easily fall into one place or another, and churches are in any one of these four quadrants. But in a home like this, where dad takes his responsibility and mom takes her, there's obvious headship and leadership, there's schedule and order, but there's also servanthood that's going on. The rules are sensible, they're based on principle, the punishments are firm, consistent, and predictable. The affection is visible because it's high in love, there's comfort in distress, there's expressions of appropriate love, and the outcome is children who are well-adjusted and able to handle responsibility, adults who care about and for others. When you get home tonight, ask your wife, what kind of home do we have? Or what kind of person do I gravitate toward being? Talk about this together and see if you're on the right track with a high expressions of love and tenderness and high expressions of discipline. That if there's something that goes wrong, it's taken care of. It's not just left to go. And as you think about that, your home, you can put your a grade to your home. Do you know what your house smells like? When you walk into the house, do you walk into somebody else's house? Do you know what it smells like? Well, if you don't stop and think about it, you don't even know what your own house smells like because you're so used to it, right? And you don't know the atmosphere of your own house with the balance of love and discipline because it's so normal you don't even think about it. But if you stop and evaluate it, are you as dad's taking your place? Are you making the household order? Are you scheduling when the family worship will be? Moms, are you making meals for the children? Are you keeping that kind of a structure? I know that after the children leave, we've kind of changed our schedule and it looks different now. But we need home life with that kind of balance. Love gets home its welcome. Discipline gives home its structure. A marriage and a home need both. Therefore, they must both exist in the hearts of the parents and must both be expressed in home life. The chart kind of wants to describe it, but it affects the balance of love and discipline, affect the mood of the home and how the mood affects growing children. And other people can smell it. Well, no, not literally smell it, but they can tell if you have it or if you don't as they get into your home. And I think we probably need to be honest with each other. If you have a child, and maybe your grandparents like we are, and if you have a home that you realize, hey, somebody's distracted here, the discipline is not existent, there's too much just left go, the order, the chaos. I know, well, I better stop talking, because it's pretty easy for us as grandparents to go around and look at the kind of what goes on and say, there's probably, I better not talk. But we see some of those things and we're very, very grateful for the signs that we see whenever parents are taking responsibility and getting that balance of love and discipline. Now, the next thing, these are what a child needs. The atmosphere, I better get a better marker here. The other thing that signs of a good home is communication is easy. In other words, people can talk about the things that are on their mind. Trust is evident. It's obvious that you can talk about, or you don't have to cover all your bases. You don't have to protect everything. You're not tense all the time. The tension is not there. And mistakes are allowable because we all make mistakes. We're human, and it doesn't have to be thrown up in your face again and again as long as you're trying to do your part. But there's accountability for what you try to do. But mistakes are allowable. And this, again, is a sign of a functional home, and it should be the description of our homes because we live there in everyday life, and this is how it should be described. Well, I'm about done with the course. What time? Yes, about time to get done. Watch for signs that your children are being provoked to anger. You can even ask them, are there things that happen that make you angry? Some of the signs include a sullen disposition and a fallen countenance. Beware if your child avoids being with you, especially in being alone with you. Beware when it seems he is more open to influence from his peers and friends than from you. And especially beware the worst case scenario, outright rebellion. Those are all signs that a child is provoked. There's something burning inside. There is something in our nature that wishes to avoid conflict. We hope if we ignore a problem, perhaps it will go away. We need to remember that God gives us outward signs when there is inward trouble. When we see the fruit, we must look for the root. If something's not working in your home or your child's relationship, it's time to look at it. What am I doing wrong? What do we need to be talking about? Maybe the least you can do is pray, but we can pray. And then we can also talk with our spouse. Often a mother can reach a son's heart in a way that a dad cannot. Or a dad can reach his daughter's heart. I've often seen that kind of a thing in a way that her mom can't. God wants us to pull together. He wants to give us wisdom for our work. As you go away from these sessions, you and your spouse should discuss these concepts. No doubt you can see your spouse's faults more clearly than your own. So take the courage to ask, what can I improve on? And take the courage to tell your spouse if you see something where they should be improving. Because your goal is to serve your family so that they grow up and embrace and espouse the values that you have received from your Father in heaven and that motivate you. finally, in the end, you're working on a project for eternity. You're working on the well-being of the souls of your children, and that produces a legacy that goes on into successive generations. Well, God bless you. I have enjoyed being here. I hope that it's been a little help to you in some way. It's helped me to reevaluate my own behavior among our family and with my wife. But you know, whatever you give away, you eventually get back again. And so much more than what you give. And it's very important to give away love, service, affection, caring, and self-discipline where you need to. Well, God bless you. It's been great to be with you.